Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. And man, it feels so good to win. Man, it feels so good to win. Arguably the most important game of our season last night, and we turned in arguably our best performance of the year. We're going to break that down. We're going to look around the league. We're going to talk about the Hall of Fame. Inductions are coming up. That'll be fun, right? And we have a guest picker on today's top 10 list. A little more information, kind of a personal connection between me and this individual. We'll get to that. And yeah, you can hear it. I'm still kind of working through whatever all this is. But so we may have to pause every now and again. But yeah, we'll get the show done. And I wanted to make sure we got it done in time for all of you that are driving to Starkville for the weekend. And I told like Robbie Falk and some guys last night, I said, man, if we win Friday, we got a chance to have another 15,000 type crowd on Saturday. Going to be a huge crowd anyway. But if we're having the opportunity to go for a sweep on Saturday, I think a lot of people on the fence will get off the fence and get in the car and come to Starkville. Be smart about how you buy your tickets. Let me just, I know everybody wants chair backs. Be careful out there in the Facebook groups and things of that nature. Buy from people you know or buy from a reputable third-party vendor like StubHub or SeatGeek. That way you get guarantees. But, yeah, big win for Mississippi State. We were the only game in town in the SEC last night. So not a lot to recap from last night other than our game, but we'll get to that right away. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. We love Bulldog Burger Company, and we have loved them since the very beginning. Once they opened that establishment, we broke bread there. And it's become a regular part of our lives. If you ask your kids, hey, we're on the way, where would you like to eat? They're going to say Bulldog Burger Company. Don't deny them the joys of life. It's one of the fine delicacies we afford ourselves, is putting our feet under the Bulldog Burger Company tables and allowing their great staff to serve us, nourish us, and entertain us. Yeah. Three great locations to serve you, University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Try one of those new smash burgers. And if you're feeling good about how you look and how you feel, maybe switch over to those chili cheese fries. They'll blow you away. And get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, in some of our pregame discussion over at Gene's page, we had a lot of people that said, hey, Auburn's best guy is going on Thursday. I didn't respond. I didn't agree. I don't think Jake Marciano is Auburn's best guy, and I didn't think it was a good matchup, especially with him essentially going on 5 days rest. But, you know, when you break it down, it's actually 4 days of actual rest. He has been good at times. But, man, he's only won like one ball game in the last month. I wasn't worried about him, but I was glad to see State jump on it. The reality of it is on paper, it looked like it was going to be a pitcher's duel. And the Bulldogs kind of changed the complexion of this game fairly early. Let's kind of check it out for those of you that missed. Tomas Valenkis was outstanding. And, the one thing that I would say, like if I was – his coach, I'd like him to be a little more pitch efficient. We do run the pitch count up a little bit. We get a ton of strikeouts, and you love the strikeout, but we have some guys that spoil pitches and kind of run that pitch count up. That's the one thing I think between this year and next year we want to be better at. Pitch efficiency. Plenty of strikeouts last night. Leadoff hitter McCrane had a tough night against Bulldog pitching. He goes down looking. And then Guevara, who's been outstanding for Auburn all year, flies out to right. Frelick strikes out looking. So 1-2-3 inning for Tico. And it looked like that was going to be the case for Marciano. He gets Fry to go down looking. The only fastball he threw in that count was on 1-2. And then Ace swings over three changeups. And if you're Auburn, after the series that Ace had last year on the Plains, you're going to make somebody besides Ace Reese beat you. And last night, that proved to be the case. But Ace goes down swinging swings at three changeups. And then we talk a little bit about effort, right? never giving up, having grit, some blue-collar appeal. Blake Bevis hits a ground ball to short that is largely routine. And the shortstop stayed back on it. That's a lesson for you young kids. You have to go get the baseball, right? Baseball, at its core, is designed at nearly a perfect game, right? I mean, what I mean by that is, how many times do you see close plays at first base? Well, it's almost every time, right? It's 90 feet to the bag. You don't see a lot of guys out by 25 feet, right? And so over the course of the history of baseball, they have refined the game to make it extremely competitive. So on this particular play, you got Blake busting it down the line. And how many players do you know in your life that would hit a routine ball to short and just kind of dogged it down the line? But instead, Blake humps it down the line, and because the shortstop stays back on it and then pats the glove probably two times too long, Blake beats it out. Well, that extends the inning. And what's interesting, too, this comes on 0-2. I mean, they're a pitch away from 1-2-3 inning where him striking out the side. But instead, because of Blake Bevis' effort, the inning is extended. Now, Noah Sullivan didn't have a good weekend against Texas. And he's kind of been like that, right? He'll have good weekend here, bad weekend there. And a lot of that's because he's a guy that's going to draw a lot of attention. But on a 2-2 count, Sully singles into left. That extends the inning further. Jacob Parker, this is a lefty-lefty matchup. And Marciano is all over the place. So they walk Parker, and they get the Bryce Chance. After the mound visit, he takes a strike and then sits changeup. And I wrote that in my pitching preview. What I would do, number one, he's a little bit tender, okay, on short rest. He's not a bigger guy anyway. Probably weighs about 170. And so he's going to be careful with the fastball. So I would suggest sitting soft, especially with a guy that's probably not going to go through the order, but maybe once, possibly twice. I'm going to sit soft early. I'm going to make him come to me. I'm going to make him be a pitcher and not just sit back and dictate terms to me. Veteran at bat here by Bryce. He gets the changeup, and he hammers that thing to left, and it's a grand slam. We went basically 3 months of the season without Bryce Chance hitting a home run, and now he's hit two. In the last three games, all of them responsible for a four spot. So when you've got a pitcher's duel on paper, and you throw up a four spot in the first inning, you feel really good about that. And then Valinkas singles to the left side to kind of extend the inning, and then Maluski goes down. So eight Bulldogs come to the plate in the first inning. Could not have really asked for a better start. Now you need the clean inning, right? You need complimentary baseball. That's exactly what Valencias gives you. Rembert goes down swinging. Bingaman, very talented first baseman for Auburn. They're expecting big things from him, and they should. Lengthy at bat here, and State finally gets him to go down swinging. But he runs the count up a little bit. Fortunately, we get Bub Terrell to ground out to shortstop on the first pitch. That negates some of that. But again, you want to manage that pitch count a little bit better. Bottom of the second, Ryder Woodson, who started in place of Drew Weyers, who was a late scratch. He was hit in the head during pregame warm-ups, thought he was okay, began to get a little dizziness, and they're like, hey, we're not going to take a chance. We'll pull him. Oak says he doesn't think it's anything long-term. So we should be good to go there. But Ryder on an 0-2 count, fights and fights and fights, and it singles back up the middle. Friedan singles off the pitcher on an 0-2 count. And that's the thing about when you begin to look at these counts, you know, we're getting base hits while we're in the deficit. We're in a disadvantaged count. Our two-strike approach, really, really good. And then Reese goes down swinging, and Bevis grounds into a double play. And just kind of a wild thing. And it's a kind of a slow roller to third. It brings Guevara to the bag. He steps on the bag and throws to first. And, you know, missed an opportunity to tack on there. But just part of baseball. We head to the third here. And, again, Tico just dealing. He gets McCrane to strike out swinging. Madrigal goes down swinging. And then Carter grounds out to third. The one lengthy at bat was to McCrane. The other threw fairly efficient there. So we feel like we're kind of getting back on track here. They left Marciano in place of Cormier. A lot of people asked last night how many of their big bullpen arms did they burn. This is really the only one. Everybody else is kind of a back of the bullpen guy. No disrespect intended. But Cormier was one of those guys that they, you know, expected to throw. He had now 16 appearances on the year. So he has done some decent things for them. Young guy out of Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Sullivan greets him with a single to left. His second hit of the night. Parker goes down swinging after a somewhat lengthy at bat. Sully still second, kind of a wild sequence there. He breaks, and then he's like, oh, stops, and then goes and makes it. Chance goes down swinging, and then Valencia singles to the left side to chase in Sully. So you're extending here, making it 5-0. Now one swing can't tie you. Maluski goes down swinging here. So we get to the fourth, and it's a 5-0 ball game, and it's all Tico all the time. Top of the order again, McCrane, Guevara, and Frelick, all three go down on strikes. Couple of lengthy at-bats there, but now we're kind of getting to the middle innings. Bottom of four, Woodson goes down swinging, but a lengthy at-bat there. Fry pops up to left field, and then Reese goes down swinging again. Tough night for Ace, but he will bounce back. Top of the fifth, Auburn finally gets on the board here, and it takes a little effort. Rembert grounds out the second, first pitch. You feel great about that. Well, then Bingham breaks up the no-hitter and the perfect game with a single back up the middle. Then you get Terrell to strike out swinging. In the course of that at-bat, Bingham takes second. And then McCrane, two-out hitting, singles through the left side, and that's where the stolen base comes back to get you, the free 90. We had that happen in Texas, but here we go again, singles through the left side. The run scores. Auburn's on the board in a 5-1 ball game. We try to pick him off at second. We throw it away. The only error in the ballgame, but your Bulldog defense played extremely well. Madrigal then grounds back to Tico, and that's the inning. All right, bottom of five. State does what good teams do. You give up runs, you answer right back. Bevis grounds out to third. Sully singles to right field, his third hit of the night, and that's another lengthy at-bat. Parker pops up to the shortstop, so we need a two-out base hit. Well, let's put in Beans, right? And what do you know? He doubles to left center. Sully scores all the way from first to make it a 6-1 ball game, and it's just so demoralizing for the other team. It's like, okay, we're finally on the board, guys. You know, one swing gets us right back in it, and then you take the lead back out. It's just demoralizing for the other dugout. Valencia flies out to center field, and that caps the inning. Top of six, Tico's just still dealing here. Gets Bristol Carter to ground out to third. That flips the order. McCrane strikes out again, and then Guevara strikes out swinging. And so right now, again, you're managing the count pretty well. And again, you don't really want to go far over seven, you know, 100 pitches. Maybe that gets you to the seventh. Maluski flies out to center. Better at bat for him. 10 more push-ups, it'd have been a home run. Woodson then walks, and he's on base again. And I thought we got good production from Ryder Woodson. They bring in Harden in place of Cormier, and Fry homers down the right field line, and it was an absolute laser off the bat. 1-1 count, chases in two runs. Now it's an 8-1 ball game. Reese lines out to right field, hit that ball really well. A little less trajectory, a little less launch there. It's probably gone. Bevison singles to center, and then Sullivan grounds to shortstop. They force the runner at second. So to the seventh we go in an 8-1 ball game in favor of Mississippi State. So Frelick goes down looking. Rembert, liked him last year at Auburn. Think he's got a bright future ahead of him. He singles through the left side. We go out and chat. Bingaman lines out the second. We nearly forced a runner at first, but just a great play by Gehrig. A joke last night, and some of you young bucks won't know the reference. I said, who'd have thought that Gehrig Fry would not only be a serviceable second baseman, but be the second coming of Roberto Alomar, right? I'm so pleased defensively with what Gehrig Fry has done this year. I think most people would be. I mean, just needed reps. He's an athlete. He was a third baseman by trade. We tried to make him an outfielder last year. But what a team first guy, man. And I said last night, I think Gehrig Fry is going to get drafted as a second baseman. So Bingham lines out the second, of course, and then Terrell last hitter for Valencia, and he was kind of on fumes here. And this is just a case of a strong guy and the ball finding the bat. It was great at bat by Terrell. Give him a lot of credit. He gets down 1-2 and then fouls off a couple, and then it just happens, right? I mean, it's just baseball, and Tico couldn't believe it. But it's an 8-3 ball game. We bring in Bauer, and he gets McCrane to fly out to right field right away. That gets the Bulldogs back on the sticks. They bring in Chatterton, and he is greeted rudely by our friend from South Mississippi, Jacob Parker, who was raised on Ward's hamburgers. He homers to right field, and it was an absolute missile. And then Bryce Chance gets down a near-perfect bunt. I thought the scoring decision was going to be interesting. I think Bryce beats it anyway, but it's going to be close. And I think when you're the hometown scorekeeper, that's got to be hit. Valencia sends singles to the left side. And how about, you know, Vitas, a guy that, you know, doesn't have huge numbers, but we're getting some production from him down the stretch while Teal's a little bit banged up. Maluski, one of the best big-bodied catchers I think I've ever seen at getting bunts down. He knows how to soften the bunt. Man, great job here. We didn't even, you know, pretend. We weren't trying to conceal it, but Maluski gets the bunt down, and because you can never have enough runs in the Southeastern Conference. And I believe you just run your offense. You don't ever, ever, ever act like the game is over. Yeah, it's a 9-3 ball game, but this is an Auburn team that is like fourth in the league in hitting. Anything could happen, especially with our bullpen at times. You've always got to be looking to tack on. I thought this was a very good decision. Maluski gets a sack bunt down, and the Bulldogs make it count. Woodson flies out to right field, and again, in a two-strike count, 1-2 count, lines to right. We'd love that that ball gotten down to get both runs in, but you get one in, and that ultimately caps the scoring on the RBI sack fly to make it 10-3. Friday lines out to right field. As we go to the eighth, Nunnally comes in and left. Reed Stallman's in the game now. They start white flagging this thing. They're ready to get the game over, too. So Clay pinch hits for Madrigal, grounds out to second. Combs pinch hits for Bristol Carter, goes down swinging, and then McCray grounds out to third base. I'm sure he was happy to just put a ball in play. Bottom of eight, Reese singles to the right side. Stallman then flies out to center, hit that ball really well, got a little bit under it, but hit it well. He's seeing the baseball well. Sully goes down swinging. Parker's then hit by the pitch. Chance grounds to third. They force a runner at second. So we go to the ninth, and Jack Bauer, very efficient in what he did, gets a ground out from Guevara, who is arguably the best hitter at Auburn. Frelick strikes out swinging. Rembert flies out to center field. That's ball game 10-3. Kind of go back and look at the numbers here. A lot of people say, why would we burn Bauer? I don't think we burned Bauer. Guys, he threw 17 pitches. Got seven outs on 17 pitches. That's absolutely ridiculous efficiency. We talked about that's one of the things we want to see Tico do a better job of, pitch efficiency. So it's clearly in us. But that's the Jack Bauer thing, too. They know they're going to get the fastball, so they're kind of trying to cheat to it. And it's tough. But, man, what a great job by Tomas Valenkas. Short of somebody, you know, throwing a no-hitter, he's a good candidate for your SEC Pitcher of the Week because of the stakes of this game and the quality of the Auburn club and the fact that he struck out 13 and didn't walk any. Guys, when we don't walk people, we're tough to beat. We didn't hit anybody. We didn't walk anybody. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and you know, on this show, we absolutely believe in taking care of our mental health. The month of May is a reminder that whatever you're going through, you don't have to go through it alone. I tell you guys all the time, everybody needs somebody they can tell everything to. Life's a journey. Some days are good. Some days can feel overwhelming. Whatever is keeping you up at night, it's easy to feel like you may have to figure it all out by yourself. The truth of the matter is, no one has the corner of the market on good answers. And no journey should have to be taken alone. Having someone with you to listen, to understand, and support you can make all the difference in the world. Guys, I've had so many challenges in life, right? Guys, 2022 was a difficult year on me, and I relied on people that I trusted. And that's a network of people that I built up over decades. But the reality of it is maybe you feel a little alone with whatever you're dealing with. That's where BetterHelp comes in. Quality therapist that will work according to a very strict code of conduct. They're fully licensed in the United States. There is also the therapist match commitment. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. There's a short questionnaire that helps you identify your needs and preferences. And our 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means we typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from all of those tailored recommendations. You don't have to do it alone. Find support and have someone with you in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com. We struck out 15. Great, great job. Look at your hitting heroes, and there were a bunch. There were. It's so interesting, too, like Jake Marciano thing. Six hits, four runs, all earned. Four strikeouts, one walk, and just two innings. And L.J. Cormier, we spoke about him. He threw a nice 69 pitches. So we probably have not seen the last of him for this year, but we've seen the last of the weekend. The rest of these guys should be able to come back. Abe Chance worked to be 26 pitches. I don't know if they're counting on him at any other point this weekend. But Garrett Fry, 2-for-5. Ace Reese, 1-for-5. Blake Bevis, 2-for-4. Noah Sullivan, 3-for-5. Jacob Parker, 1-for-3. Bryce Chance, 3-for-5. Vitas Valenkas, 3-for-4. Kevin Malewski, 0-for-3. Ryder Woodson, 1-for-2. So 8 of your 9 Bulldog starters with a base hit last night. Yeah, you love that, don't you? And, of course, Beans with 5 RBI makes for a nice night at home with the wife. Right, Bryce? But nevertheless, Bulldogs play exceptionally well. And, again, the one error is on an errant pickoff throw. Outside of that, we played it well. I thought Ace Reese made some really nice plays, too. Ryder Woodson ranging across the middle makes a play that's very difficult, look very easy. But at the end of the day, Bulldogs win. One of the most important games of the season, not just because of the fact that we needed a top 10 win, right? Because it's been kind of the knock on this team is like, man, they can beat all the pretty good teams and the really good teams. They can't beat any great ones. This Auburn team's really good. So what does that do for the RPI? For those of you that hadn't kept up, State moves from 8 to 6. Auburn stays right where they are at 4. And I think that's absolutely fine if you're Mississippi State, right? You win tonight, things may be a little bit different. Strength of schedule moves from 12 to 11. And that's one of the discussions that we've had extensively on Gene's page is the quality of the non-conference schedule. Well, you know, guys, the non-conference RPI for Mississippi State is 5. 5. 5. And so there's not an argument to be made. And you can say, well, you know, I don't know why we play some certain schools. You know, at some point, you got to get some young guys some playing time. And you can't play 56 high-leverage games week in and week out and expect your team to have any juice when you get in the postseason. You can't. But as it sits today, and of course, there'll be a lot of fluctuation over the course of the weekend. And listen, Mississippi State obviously has a tremendous opportunity with Auburn and A&M to further validate ourselves as a top 8 worthy team. It's right there for us. And that's one of the reasons last night was so big. And I joked with some of my friends at Auburn yesterday. I said, I love you guys to death, but I got to have 2. And they're thinking, man, if we can just get 1, we'd be happy. And I said, well, this may be a weekend where everybody ends up with what they want. But, man, you start thinking about what would a sweep look like. Well, it would change the complexity of a lot of things, right? It truly would. Not expecting that. Auburn's a good team. It'll be interesting to see how we pitch it on Saturday. But one of the things that I want to caution people about, because I've already seen it, right? And a lot of it is just people don't understand. Ryan McPherson had a very serious injury. It didn't require surgery, but it required a lot of rest and therapy. And it's just like atrophy, right? When you don't use those muscles for their intended purposes, they get a little weaker on you. So you have to build the arm back up. So anything that we get out of him this weekend, assuming he pitches, is a bonus. But those of you that are assuming that he's going to just go right back into the rotation, and pick up where he left off, you're just setting yourself up for disappointment, right? Now, I think we need to get him on the mound before we get into a regional, obviously. And maybe it's an inning here, two innings there. And then maybe you go to Hoover and maybe let him open a game there. And then he's good to go for a regional. That makes a lot of sense to me. But anybody expecting him to come out and like if he throws more than two or three innings this weekend, I will be surprised. I would be. You haven't put him in a high leverage situation. He's had some simulated games. He's had some bullpen sessions. So he's building back up. And I can tell you, Ryan is the consummate competitor. He wants to be on that bump. But he also doesn't want to hurt his team. He wants to make sure that he's ready to go. Now, I know that mentally, that's the big challenge, right? Even when the arm is ready to go, you got to learn to trust it. And so, you know, Brian O'Connor and Justin Parker know what they're doing. But, again, I know what's going to happen in the event that he doesn't have a big role this weekend. There are going to be some fans that don't understand. They're going to say, I don't understand why we didn't pitch him more. Well, we're still building him back up. So it's important not to expect too much from him. Auburn's going to throw Alvarez tonight, Andreas Alvarez, and you can read my full breakdown on him over at jeanspage.com if you're a member. But I wanted to go over a few things with you guys as we kind of get ready for this. Now, he is a guy that has been in their system for 2 years. He's a product of Northside Christian School in St. Petersburg, Florida, and had a good freshman year. He was a reliever and kind of a spot starter for them and made 14 appearances and 9 starts, but 3-1 record with a 4.80 ERA. That's pretty good numbers for a freshman. Allowed just 1 strikeout to walk ratio. Well, that has jumped this year. He has walked the same number of hitters that he did all last year, but he stomped 14 more innings, but he struck out 80. Yeah, so the strikeout numbers are ridiculous. Now, he is listed at 5'10". I think he's probably a little bit shorter than that, which creates an interesting dynamic. Because he is a shorter guy, you don't know what to expect from an extension standpoint. He gets really good extension because he gets down the slope. So as a result, that fastball kind of stays on the same plane. And as he dips, the fastball stays up. So it kind of gives you an optical illusion. He's not a fastball-only pitcher. A lot of curves, a lot of sliders, a lot of spin with him. You got to take something away. But, you know, one of the reasons that I didn't say a lot about when people are like, oh, Marciano's their best guy, I just don't agree. I think Alvarez is probably the guy that I like the most on this Auburn staff. And Petrovic is a guy, too, that's really good. But Alvarez is a guy that's very, very interesting. And it's not necessarily what you normally see in the SEC. But it's kind of like the Butch Thompson miracle, right? Butch takes some guys that are just kind of, you know, scratch and dent. And he did that here. And then he makes it work. You know, Auburn gets some very good players from time to time. But one of the best jobs that I think Butch Thompson does, and he did it when he was here as well, is to take that guy that's got a little something to prove and maybe something in his game that needs to be refined, and then he builds him up. Now, while I think Marciano has kind of faded a little bit over the last few weeks, Alvarez has gotten better, and that's the concern with me. Now, you can kind of run this whole thing back here. Like, once we get into conference play, Alvarez, they get a win over Arkansas. So he beats Arkansas. And they get a win over Kentucky. And those games were a little bit lopsided. 2 runs against Arkansas, 5 against Kentucky. They lose to Florida 6-3. Tough outing for him. He only goes 2 1/3, allows 4 runs on 6 hits. But the last 2 outings for him against Oklahoma, he pitches into the 7th, gives up 3 runs on 5 hits. That's a 6-4 win. And then last week, he went the full 7 in a mercy ruling game of Texas A&M 18-5, gave up 4 earned runs on 6 hits. And so I think he is getting stronger as the season is going on, even though he has set a career high in innings pitched at any point in his life. Now, this is back-to-back road starts, And that's one of the things a lot of people will tell you is a difficult thing for younger teams. And even though he is a sophomore, we still consider him a younger guy. It takes so much out of you emotionally to go on the road and win. And then you got to do it back-to-back weekends. At some point, that happens to everybody. It's kind of an unfortunate situation for Auburn that it happened so late in the year. However, they won last weekend against Texas A&M. So we're going to have our hands full tonight. And, again, we want to get into that bullpen. And we know that they're going to throw Petrovic on Saturday. We haven't announced who we're going to start yet. So just give you a few quick things about some other arms to see. You know, Jackson Sanders didn't throw last night. You know, best case scenario for Auburn last night was Marciano gets you through the order a couple times, Cormier comes in and then gives way to Sanders, and you get a win. Best case for us would have been if they had spent Sanders in a loss. So we're still going to see him. But Alex Petrovic, 7-2 on the year, 3.14 ERA. He's another guy, too, that's got a dozen starts under his belt. But he's running 5 to 6 innings. And so the bullpens are going to determine how this weekend kind of plays out. So everybody that can kind of save some things are huge. But Jackson Sanders, guys, these numbers are ridiculous, right? I mean, so, yeah, he's 3-1 with a 2.84. But he's thrown over 50 innings this year. Yeah, 50 innings, 71 strikeouts against 17 walks. And that's the thing. He's got starter-type numbers, but he's only got 7 starts. And I thought he may be their starter last night. And so I'm just kind of curious to see how the thing plays out. So basically, they have 4 starters, and Jackson Sanders is a guy, obviously, that can pitch as needed, and he's one of their more talented pitchers. We will see him, especially when they have a lead, but you're also not going to go the whole weekend without throwing him. So expect to see him. But, Cormier is probably burned for the weekend, but you start looking at some of these other guys. Ryan Hatzler is a guy that's got 14 appearances. We expect to see him at some point. Jed Johnson is another. So they've got some other bullpen arms. Garrett Brewer has been good for them, but he's more of a matchup guy. They've got some arms to burn. And really, Cormier is the only one of any notable, you know, SEC-type success that they've used so far that we shouldn't expect to see the rest of the weekend. So I do think State takes a series. I think if you win tonight, there's a great chance that you sweep. But, man, that Sunday game, as we know, you never know how those things are going to go. I think it's so important for State to win tonight and then figure it out on Sunday. But you've gotten one, which gets you to 15 wins. We've talked about this many, many times. 17 gets you in the top 8 conversation. 18 probably drives it home. And now here you are with 5 games left to play, and if you can go 3-5 in those 5 ball games, I think you have locked up a top 8 national seed. Partially because of how well you play, but also, too, that you're going to close it out and kind of clear traffic for yourself against some teams that have played exceptionally well this year, but are also in contention for the same thing. All right, time for today's Top 10 List, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. His phone number, 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Call or text him directly. That's not a call center or a receptionist. That's his personal cell number. Yeah, that's his personal cell number. And go ahead and save it in your phone as mortgage guy, because you may forget the name, you won't forget the need, and when it's time to buy a home or refinance a home, you've already got a mortgage loan originator in your phone. Yeah, it's a life hack for you. Get his 25 years of expertise and know-how working for you. Several of our Boneyard listeners have closed loans with Blair and given us rave reviews. Yeah. So, licensed to practice in multiple states. Knows all the ins and outs of underwriting. He knows how to construct loans to give you the best chance of approval. So when life throws you a curveball, rather than stress about it more than you have to, let Blair do some of the heavy lifting for you. He can make the dream of home ownership come true for you when so many others can't. So whether it's your first home, your next home, your retirement home, or perhaps that game day condo, which may prove to be more affordable than you think, the only name to know is Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Okay. I got a text this morning as we're working through our day to prepare. And Ian Robertson the star employee at Bulldog Burger Company in Starkville, also my younger son, hit me up. And he had an idea. He goes, hey, have you done top 10 solo songs by the Beatles, like all their separate stuff? I was like, no, but it's a good idea. What are your favorites? I'll do it today. He goes, I'll have you a list in an hour. Well, he had me a list in about 15 minutes. And so he goes, this is probably my top 10, but make it known that my preference of Beatles is George, John, Paul, and Ringo. Now, there is some validity to what Ian says. Now, he did not grow up with the Beatles playing routinely on the radio. But back in February, and I don't know if this is on Spotify. I think it's Spotify. But anyway, Ian Robertson was the number one listener of the Beatles on the Mississippi State University campus. I think that Spotify, whatever one of these things that like tracks your listens, number one. So he is speaking with the voice of young authority. So I'm going to give you Ian Robertson, my youngest son, who will be a senior at Mississippi State next year, and then probably going to get his master's somewhere else. He wants to have a different experience, and like everybody else, he's working through these Canvas issues, this Canvas crisis. If you haven't heard, you know, some people hack Canvas, which is very much a part of the college experience, and finals have been a little bit delayed for a lot of people. But anyway, Ian wanted to contribute to the show and to contribute to your experience, so here we go. And again, reminder, his preference of Beatles is George, John, Paul, and Ringo, okay? Now, I didn't go through and parse this list. This is his list, okay? Number 10 is It Don't Come Easy from Ringo Starr. That's number 10. Number 9, I believe, is actually a cover, but since this is an unsolicited list from my youngest son, we're going to allow it. The video is incredible. Got My Mind Set on You from George Harrison at number 9. Number 8, and again, you got to be a fan to appreciate this one. It's Uncle Albert, Admiral Halsey from Paul McCartney. And number 7, not technically a solo song. It's after Paul McCartney left the Beatles and created Wings with his wife Linda McCartney. They put together a great track that ultimately became part of a James Bond lexicon and eventually covered by Guns N' Roses as part of the Use Your Illusion albums. It's Live and Let Die. And I think the orchestral part on this is just next level. Number 6, a collaboration. Some of you have gone out and seen the Michael Jackson movie. Jacob Band went and saw it. I didn't, but he has gone to see it. But my favorite Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson collaboration is Say, Say, Say. However, Ian chose to go with The Girl Is Mine with Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney. I don't know. I know Paul sang backup on it. I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but it's his list. We're going to respect that. Number 5, which would have been number 1 for me, but again, it's not my list. It's not my list. Number 5 is Imagine from John Lennon. I think it's too low, but as Ian, as the Beatle expert in our family, we will go with him. Number 4 is Hold On, also from John Lennon. Number 3, and you can expect a couple of George Harrison songs in the top 3. Number 3 is Isn't It a Pity from George Harrison. And number 2, and I guess this in some ways kind of reflects on my own life and relationship, because you know, for a while we thought we were done having kids. We did. And we initially said we wanted to have 4. We wanted to have a big family, wanted to have 4. We had Ani, we had Audrey, we had Mia. When we got Mia home, I said, you know, this is good. Maybe 3's enough. Maybe we can be outnumbered. Me and Ani would be the 2 males, and we'd have, you know, a couple of girls and my beautiful bride. And then Ian showed up, and he's kept me young. He really has. He's been such a value to my life. And I have loved being his dad. Absolutely loved being his dad. And he is more of a mama's boy, to be honest with you. He and I talk a lot about music. And when he's got problems, though, he tends to go to her or his sisters. It's Beautiful Boy from John Lennon at number two. That's the track. And Ian has such great hair. We didn't get a haircut for him, I guess, until he was about 4 or 5. And he had these beautiful ringlets, much like his dad, but his were even better. And he was such a beautiful child. And then one day, he decided to get his hair cut because the kids at kindergarten were giving him problems about his hair. And he convinced his mom, let him get a haircut, and then he regretted it almost immediately. But at times he grows it out. Other times he gets it short. I don't care what he does with his hair. I just care about what he does with his life. And, he's a criminology major and wants to go catch the bad guys. But number one, and maybe a surprise, it's Give Me Love from George Harrison. That is his number one Beatles side project, solo project tracks. That's Ian Robertson's number one top 10 Beatles solo songs list. And as his old man, I appreciate his contribution and interest in the show. And one of the things that I'll tell you about him, and I love all my children. They're all very high achievers. I don't know that any of them have a heart for people more than Ian does, though. They're all very kind people, but Ian is one of those kinds of people that just never, ever, ever makes an enemy, and he never sees anybody as an enemy. He's not as competitive, I guess, as some of the other kids. And, with competition sometimes comes contempt. And Ian just wants everybody to have a good time and have a good life. I mean, he is very, very, very much a live and let live person, even more so than I am. And that's one of the things that I've always tried to teach my children is, live your life the best you can and do as much as you can to help other people. But don't condemn people for how they live because they may value different things in your life. And Ian kind of got that lesson, but I also think it's in his nature. He's just one of those kinds of people that just brings kindness and sunshine everywhere he goes. Ani is much different, right? Everybody loves Ani, but you want Ani on your team because he will find a way to win. You want Ian on your team for different reasons because he's such a great teammate, and he's not going to be that overly aggressive, overly competitive type person. But, it's super cool. And, again, the Beatles is his own thing, right? And I got a friend of mine that the Beatles is his favorite band beyond all possible options. And he loves the fact that Ian has become a big Beatles guy. And he's like, I got to send Ian my playlist, Got to give him my thoughts on this. And, I loved it. My children love music. And how could they not growing up in this household? But that was an unsolicited suggestion today that kind of saved me a little time and effort. And so it's interesting that young people love the Beatles. And I really think in many respects, because Ian and Audrey and I used to have our little movie club. Sometimes Mia would go with us, but more times than not, it was just the three of us before Audrey left town and moved to Florida. And I took them to see Yesterday. And I believe that is one of the things that really, really excited Ian about the Beatles. Because the music from that show, obviously, are all cover songs of the Beatles. And I think because of that story, and you find out how people love the Beatles, I think it stirred up something in him. He's like, I got to dip a little deeper into this. And sometimes he'll hit me up with a Bee Gees song, Fleetwood Mac song, and it makes me proud because those are the classics, right? And so we may bring him back every once in a while when he has an idea, and some of his friends are so funny, they'll listen to the show and they'll go tell him, your dad did your Beatles list, right? And it's one of the things, too, that's so interesting, too. Like, my kids didn't know I was cool until they went to college. And my girls just thought I was like their dad. What does he do? He just types on the computer all day. And then they get on campus. You're like, oh, dude, that's your dad? I follow him on Twitter. And they're like, oh, okay, well, maybe dad does something worthwhile with his life. But Ian has kind of understood that and appreciated that maybe more than the girls have. And Ian, interesting name, right? Those of you guys that know, I'm a huge rock guy. And one of my favorite singers of all time is Ian Astbury from The Cult. And Dana liked the three name thing since we have such a lengthy last name. So we have Ani, Audrey, Mia, and Ian. And so I was, we were going to name him Ian Hunter. That was the plan. And then my wife's grandfather, John Johnson, who grew up on the reservation in Philadelphia, he was abandoned as a child and taken in, raised on a reservation. And he went on to fight and spend a career in the military. And that's how he made his living and supported his family. And in many respects, he was a war hero and an American patriot. And so he got sick right around the time Ian was about to be born, and we decided to change Ian's birth name prior to his birth. John Victor Johnson was Dana's grandfather. And so Ian, of course, is Scottish for John, and we are of Scottish descent. So his name is Ian Victor Robertson. And he is proud to have that name, a name of such distinguished heritage within his family. So next time your Bulldog Burger Company asks to sit in the Ian section, we'd appreciate that. And he'll give you quality service, and you'll get to know him a little bit. But he's a great young man, and we're awfully proud of him. And I thank Ian for the suggestion today. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti, my friend, on X at Dogmatic67. That's DawgMatic67. You can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. And what do you know? You might be Roy's biggest listener of the year. Who knows? But we do our best to keep you guys apprised of the classics and the new material that's coming out these days. And thanks for your support of the top 10 list over so many years. Next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart. We do. We love it. We love it. We love it. And why do we love it? Well, one of the reasons we love it for the reasons we do is because they have the things we want. When it's gift buying time in your life, don't overthink it. Don't get too cute. Don't try to build a better mousetrap. Just buy us Mississippi State merch. You can't go wrong buying a Bulldog Mississippi State merch, whether it's apparel, things decorate the home, the office, the RV, the car, anything like that. You can find it at Campus Bookmart. Next time you're in town, stop by and see their smiling faces. Football season will be here before you know it, but before we do, we're expecting to have some postseason baseball here. So be prepared for some new MOS merch that is maybe regional specific, and Campus Bookmart, your place to find every bit of that once it becomes available. If you can't make it to town, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. All right, let's take a look at this new Hall of Fame class. And Dave Murray with a story right as the news broke. And we had the opportunity, of course, to help get the message out to kind of celebrate these new M Club Sports Hall of Fame inductees. And there's some names you know and maybe some ones you're not quite as familiar with. Well, we'll start Mario Austin. Makes perfect sense, right? What a great run he had. Scored almost 1,200 points and pulled down 570 rebounds in his career. Incredible performer. If memory serves me correct, from York, Alabama. I think that's right. And won the 2002 Southeastern Conference Tournament in 2003. Helped us win the SEC Western Division when that was a thing. And made the tournament in both years. He was selected by the Bulls in the second round. And you may recall he went to Russia. And there was all this craziness out there. Like he had a collapsed lung in Russia. Had to kind of escape from Russia. It was all crazy. Also joining the class is Jonathan Banks from just up the road in Webster County, former Jim Thorpe Award winner. Incredible college career. Did some incredibly important things for us. And probably nobody better at stripping a fumble. Some big things happen, right? And, of course, the two pick sixes against Tim Tebow in a game that we lost, but still a tremendous accomplishment. But second rounder by the Bucks. Spent five seasons in the NFL with the Buccaneers, Lions, Bears, and Houston Texans. Still see Jonathan around every now and again. He'll post pictures of him riding his horses. He is as Mississippi as they come and certainly worthy of induction into our Hall of Fame. Daniel Boyd, linebacker Daniel Boyd. And for you Young Bucks, you don't understand how important Daniel Boyd was to us. Mike Backer in the early Jackie Sherrill era, all-SEC player in 91 and 92, and was just part of some defenses that just took no prisoners and made no apologies for it. In 1992, he had 128 tackles. Finished a career with 339, also an academic All-American. Tremendous player, and another guy, it's a no-brainer. Another no-brainer, Fletcher Cox, may be one of our best opportunities to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's the pride of Yazoo City, Mississippi. Fletcher Cox, three-year letter winner at State, absolutely dominant performer. He was an All-American in 2011 and made the All-SEC freshman team. And just everywhere we went, he was in the middle of big things. Really in the early years of the Dan Mullen era, really kind of setting the stage for what we were going to accomplish. And declared early for the draft, was a 12th overall pick by the Philadelphia Eagles. He spent 12 years all with the Eagles and won a Super Bowl back in 2018. And there was a time that Fletcher Cox was considered the best defensive tackle in all of professional football. And he is a young guy that's made us proud, and it's hard to call him a young guy now when he's about to go into the Hall of Fame, but man, what a tremendous career. And then there's Kingston. One of the best golfers in Mississippi State history, won six individual tournament titles as a Bulldog, second only to Julia Lopez Ramirez. She was an All-American, All-SEC, three times. Yeah, makes absolute perfect sense. And then she eventually served as the head golf coach for a few years too. And there's Ted Milton, Ted Yard Dog Milton. In the Ron Polk Ring of Honor, was on one of our best teams ever in 1970. And it was on our first ever College World Series team in 1971. Also made a tremendous career as a high school coach around this state. Everybody knows Yard Dog Milton within South Mississippi coaching circles. But a tremendous player and a tremendous man, and so glad to call him a friend. I've been able to document his story in books, and it's so nice to see him be recognized. In 4 years, he had 311, 23 dingers, 18 doubles, 14 triples, and drove in 96 runs. He scored 102 runs. He was an All-American. He was drafted twice by the Cardinals in 72 and then the Angels in 73. Tremendous man. Tremendous Bulldog. I know I'm going to mess this name up, so please forgive me. But Kanchingi Sorrell Howard, women's basketball, one of the best players in program history. She was first-team All-SEC selection in her 2 years at Starkville. Averaged nearly 21 points a game over her career. In 2 years, nearly 1,300 points. That's the 15th most in state history. Her 20.8 career points per game is second only to LaToya Thomas. Still mentioned extensively throughout the Mississippi State record book. Amy York Strickland goes in for volleyball. A star for 4 years from 89 to 92. All SEC, academic All-American, SEC Female Scholar Athlete of the Year. At the end of her career, she stood in the top five in state history in career attack attempts, digs, blocks, and assists, and remains in the top 10 in multiple categories in Mississippi State program history. So a very distinguished class going in this year. Largely football heavy, but at the same time, too, guys like Ted Milton, Mario Austin, Fletcher, really all of them are very deserving. But, you know, some names of recent memory that have had some success at the college and the professional level, getting their due. The M-State Hall of Fame Gala will be Friday, September 25th. That's the day before our home game against Missouri. For those of you looking to attend, you can make those arrangements. And so they announce the class in the spring, and then we celebrate them and induct them in the fall. And again, eight players going into the Hall of Fame. I still think we need an actual Hall of Fame somewhere. right, to be able to honor these people, and they can bring their children, their grandchildren, their neighbors, and I understand what a big deal they were at Mississippi State and continue to be among our fan base. And, you know, there's always room to celebrate greatness. And it's so great to see so many people that we know get their names called. And you can imagine how much fun it is making those calls to tell people that they're being inducted into the M Club Hall of Fame. Had an opportunity to write so many of those stories and interview so many of those players. It's very special. And it's one of those things, too, that we hold in high regard just because it is very difficult to get in. And M Club members themselves vote on it. And so it's your peers voting you in. It's not necessarily a fan vote. It's those that understand, you know, what you went through to get there. That's an important aspect of all of this. Congratulations to all the new inductees. We look forward to seeing you in maroon and white this fall. And again, you never know who's going into the Ring of Honor, who's going into the Hall of Fame, but it's always so wonderful when we recognize our former student athletes for their contributions to Mississippi State athletics. All right, final segment of the show is going to kind of be a potpourri segment. Got a lot to kind of talk about and cover here. We'll do a little bit of baseball preview too, but we're going to talk really more about kind of where things stand as we push toward the NCAA tournament. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, especially when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page pops up for you. You can peruse the amenities available to you and your guests, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area, plenty of parking. That didn't make the pictures, but you can trust me on this. It's the old renovated country club out past the Highlands, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating right there. Super cool, man. Super convenient. Just off 182. Just mosey on up, get on the highway, next thing you know, you're on campus. And so if it's a ball game weekend for you, you can get to and from your accommodations very quickly. It's open 365 days a year. When you Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, some booking options are going to pop up. It's Airbnb, VRBO, and then, of course, the Evolve website. If you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website, promo code BSR10. That gets you 10% off your stay. BSR10, the number 10, gets you 10% off. We stayed there for New Year's at 25, had a blast, can't wait to do it again. Make some memories with the people you love the most, and that's exactly what you're going to get when you stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. It's so nice to have everybody under one roof rather than scattered all over the county, or even the Golden Triangle. If you've got a work group, a friend group, a family group, this is the route for you, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right, we broke some news earlier today. Mississippi State making some changes on the basketball staff. A lot of this stuff has been rumored. It is now confirmed that Mississippi State will not be bringing back Scott Padgett, who has been with us since 2022. And I understand that he was informed that he wouldn't be brought back and was encouraged to get another job. But we are bringing Sean Buchanan back, who spent some time with us as a GA. You know, he's played for Jans before, knows the Jans system. So, that's something that we have been sitting on for a while and finally got confirmation today that it was, time to run the story. And so we've kind of been keeping up on it. And that's one of the most important things for us is try to make you guys apprised of what's happening. So as we said after the season was over, don't expect Jans just to run it back with what he did before. And this is kind of the first move or two in that respect. Also, on the football side, as you know, Mason Miller is back. And we broke that news last week, maybe the week before. It all runs together when you travel as much as I do. But Mason Miller back, and I understand he's doing a great job. And one of the cool things about it is, you know, he'll be able to be with the players, you know, when the coaches are on the road recruiting and things of that nature. And as I joked with somebody earlier, Mason Miller is not ever going to be the good cop, right? He is a guy that is going to get after people, but his guys love him because he coaches from the heart. And he has stepped in and done a good job. Of course, a lot of changes on the offensive line. You know, Phil Aldholt returns, but you bring in, an associate offensive line coach, and now Mason Miller is an offensive line consultant. And again, it says a lot about Jeff Lebby to bring Mason back. And I think, you know, there was a lot of you guys that wanted Mason to be retained in the Arnett year. And maybe things would have been a little bit different. Who knows? But the reality of it is he's back now. He wants to be here. He's been at Duty Noble Field pretty much every time we've played since he got back. I called him last week and joked with him. I was passing by the Baylor Stadium and asked him if he needed me to go settle any scores with him for him before I left. But the reality of it is we all knew the offensive line was the biggest glaring weakness on this team last year. And Jeff Lebby has taken some steps in the portal, but also with his staff to correct that issue. I think that says volumes about Lebby, that he's not oblivious to what's going on. I mean, obviously, he's a former offensive lineman. He knows what it's supposed to look like. And now he has taken some steps to ensure that it looks the way that it should. That's an important aspect of this. Men's tennis hosting a super regional against Georgia. I don't know if you guys have kept up with that. Big match tomorrow. Obviously, huge, huge, huge opportunity for Mississippi State. Is you know, they are the, what, sixth seed in this thing? And we'll host Georgia. And obviously, it's a team that we know. You know, we beat them 4-2 in Starkville back on March the 8th. So just 2 months ago, we had the opportunity to compete with them. And so it should be a good situation for Mississippi State. State obviously gets through the first round against Tennessee Tech. They get Wisconsin 4-0 and now the Super. So you win this thing and all of a sudden, you know, some big things could happen for you. And the NCAA Team Championships, ironically, will take place in Athens, Georgia next weekend. You know, so you win, you beat Georgia, then you head to Georgia. Kind of funny how that works. On the softball side of things, the ladies will find out on Sunday if they made the NCAA tournament, and we expect them to make it. Just about everybody in the SEC does. But 38-18 overall, 9-15 record in the conference, 10-10 away from News Park, and 8-1 on neutral fields. Of course, the ladies beat Kentucky in the SEC tournament and then are eliminated by Arkansas. Back on May 6th. So we just kind of wait now. We'll find that on Sunday. So that's just something to kind of keep you apprised of as we get ready to kind of move forward. Let's take a quick look at you know, the baseball schedule. We touched on some of this on Wednesday's show, but I thought, hey, let's take a quick look back and then we'll look at what it means RPI-wise for us as we, you know, prepare for another huge night. And again, I expect a huge crowd tonight. I'm sure you guys do as well, but Saturday could be a great one. It's the only game left that's guaranteed tonight and tomorrow. But Oklahoma is at Arkansas. And what's interesting, too, about these two, because at this point you have to look at everything through the lens of postseason. Oklahoma is 19 in the RPI, which is big, right? And, you know, what's so interesting to me about Arkansas is, you know, we talked about this earlier in the year, that they had the most favorable schedule in the Southeastern Conference, and they have not taken advantage of it, which makes that series loss up there sting so much. But they're 29th in the RPI, so I don't think either of these teams can catch us. I don't know that Oklahoma can play their way into a hosting opportunity unless they just get red hot. They're 12-12 with six games to play. Now, if they swept the rest of the regular season, then yeah, it's a different conversation. I just don't expect that to happen. But since we don't play Oklahoma, we need Arkansas to win some games to make those losses look a little bit better. So I think your rooting interest here is Arkansas. But also of note, Arkansas is 13-11, so we don't want them to be you know, they're on our heels. You know, we're 15-10, and you know, they're a game and a half behind us because they hadn't played yet. But we want them to win games, but not enough games that they catch us because they hold a tiebreaker against us. We really want that 4 seed or better in the SEC tournament. So your rooting interest in this game is Arkansas, but we want to split, right? 2-1, Arkansas to take it. We want Arkansas to remain behind us in the standings but improve their RPI. Alabama and South Carolina. Well, this is an obvious one since we don't play Alabama, and Alabama is ahead of us in the RPI by one spot. Now, again, Alabama is kind of like Auburn, where they benefited from a great year in-state, non-conference-wise. You got some teams out there that have done some good things. They're one spot ahead of us, but they're also 13-11 in the standings, so they're behind us. This is an easy call. We need South Carolina to win as many games as they can because it strengthens our RPI and it weakens Alabama. Now, if we keep winning, we'll just take care of ourselves. But we need all the metrics to work in our favor. So your rooting interest against Alabama is absolutely South Carolina. And South Carolina surprises people from time to time. You know, that they've been able to pull off a win. And any win they get helps us because Alabama is in no way in connection with us in our RPI composite. So any win South Carolina gets is a good one. We'd love to see South Carolina get a couple games, not just because it helps our RPI, but it gives us more room between us and Alabama. LSU and Georgia. Well, this is another easy one. We got three wins over Georgia. We got three wins over LSU and three losses to Georgia. I think this is going to be a better series than people anticipate. And the reason that I say that, LSU has two frontline starters, but Cason Evans is still out. But in Foley Field, LSU has a chance to be a very physical team. I won't be surprised if they win the series. But we do expect them to take a game. So again, Georgia is ahead of us in the standings. And of course, there's this whole anomaly about Georgia's RPI. Now, we're not going to be able to catch Georgia in the standings barring something totally unforeseen. However, Georgia, sitting there at 16 in the RPI, they're going to get a top eight as the SEC champion, despite the fact their RPI may actually be in the high teens. And so that's going to bump somebody back. And so the farther they fall in the RPI, then the more likely they are to be a 7 or an 8. We just got to stay ahead of the curve and win as many games. People are like, there's no way that they'll put Mississippi State ahead of Georgia. Well, yeah, they could. You never know what the league is going to do. But I think Georgia presents quite the calamity for the committee because you have to punish them some for that weak non-conference. Like their strength of schedule in the non-conference is 89. The RPI is 231. And when you begin to kind of do your research here, that is the highest non-conference strength of schedule of the top 20 RPI teams in the country. So they're going to host, no doubt about that, and they're probably going to be a top eight. But you also can't reward them for scheduling so light. That's one of those things you look at. You know, it's just, and they have the second highest non-conference RPI in the top 40, 50 maybe. Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, it really is. They stacked up a bunch of wins against teams that aren't very good. So we need LSU to get us some wins here. Texas and Tennessee. Well, we got one win over Texas. We got three losses to Tennessee. Now, again, this is one where you're a little bit split on this one because Texas is ahead of us in the RPI. And you know, we got the same number of SEC wins. They hold a tiebreaker against us. But the reality of it is we really need Tennessee to win some games here to move their our losses. We have three quad two losses, and that's Tennessee. We need Tennessee to beat Texas and get back into quad one. And that'll help us, again, kind of build our resume. You know, so in the event Tennessee can beat Texas, and I don't think they can twice, that helps Mississippi State in the standings. It gives you a chance to possibly finish ahead of Texas. It's going to be tough because of Texas' remaining schedule. But we got to take this one weekend at a time. So your rooting interest is Tennessee in hopes of getting Tennessee back into the quad one, which moves those three losses to Tennessee to quad one losses, which enables us to have a better RPI composite. That's very important. I mean, all these things factor in. It's not just who you beat, but it's who you beat and who they beat. And it's not just who you lose, but what their schedule looks like. All right, Kentucky and Florida, we don't play either one of these teams. But Florida's right behind us. They're two games back in the win column at 13-11. They're also a team that's got 15 quad one wins. And so they're right there in the gumbo, right? Right there between 12 and 8. And you wonder, right, will they be a top 8? Will they just be a simple host? Well, we can make things easier. Nick Mangione can help us. Nick and those guys are fighting to get into the tournament. We want Kentucky to win here. Now, when it's all said and done, the metrics right now favor Mississippi State over Florida. Florida's 32-17, but again, 26 games against the quad one. They got 15 wins, but they also have 3 quad four losses. So the more losses they tack up, the easier it is to bypass Florida in the discussion for a potential top eight. I would say right now they're absolutely out, even with an RPI of 12. I don't think they can play their way in unless they sweep the season. I think that's what has to happen for them. I think the metrics work against them. And so we want Kentucky, even though it doesn't impact our RPI, we need Kentucky to win this series. It's going to be tough to do, but that's your rooting interest. Then there's Texas A&M against Ole Miss. Well, we have 4 wins over Ole Miss. We play Texas A&M next weekend. Well, this is an easy one, if you ask me. Because of the fact A&M is now behind State in the RPI, but ahead of us in the standings, Ole Miss is 12-12. And so even if they sweep this weekend, they would be at best even with us. Like if we lose out, let's say we go 15-12 after the weekend's over, they sweep, they're 15-12, and we hold the tiebreaker. So there's no loss there for us. But Ole Miss taking the series against Ole Miss helps Mississippi State potentially have a higher finish in the conference. Because again, right now we're 15-10, they're 15-8. So that gives us a chance to go to Texas A&M and win the series and potentially finish second or third in the conference. So yeah, you're pulling for Ole Miss this weekend. Or to make you guys feel better, you're pulling against Texas A&M. And again, A&M behind State in the RPI, but ahead of us in the standings. Ole Miss behind us in the RPI and well behind us in the standings, but a team that's capable of doing some things. And weird things happen at Swayze. Vanderbilt's at Missouri. We got 3 wins over Vandy. We didn't play Missouri. That's an easy take for us. We want Vanderbilt to win the series. That also would give Vanderbilt 13 league wins and give them an opportunity to play their way into the tournament next weekend. Yeah, it's an important aspect of this. And, you know, of course, you guys know about Auburn and Mississippi State. But, you know, once we beat teams, you know, at that point, we have to start rooting for those teams to go win some games, even though it may be a little bit uncomfortable for us. That's just kind of how the game works. And then kind of looking ahead the next weekend, and it's going to be wild. I mean, it is. I mean, that's the thing. You love baseball this time of year. And that's really what you want, right, is to be playing meaningful baseball late in May. So next weekend, Arkansas visits Kentucky. Kentucky can be a tough place to play. Arkansas, well-coached team, you know, against a very gritty Kentucky squad. And Arkansas will make the tournament. I don't think they play their way into hosting, but let's say Arkansas wins the series against Oklahoma and then wins against Kentucky, well, that would give them 17 SEC wins. But again, they've got some bad non-conference juju, so not going to play their way into a top eight unless something crazy happens, but they should be able to host. Of course, State's at A&M. South Carolina is at Vanderbilt. We have 3 wins over both of them, so it really doesn't matter to us. We know South Carolina's RPI is what it is. But again, Vandy makes a tournament. That helps us. From an RPI standpoint, you don't want Vandy to miss and South Carolina both to miss the tournament. Ole Miss will be at Alabama. We don't play Alabama. So, again, we're cheering for the Rebels. We want them to do well, just not better than us. Then Missouri's at Texas, and you know how that game is going to go, right? That's just how. That's why it's going to be so difficult to catch them. But, again, maybe Tennessee could surprise them. Missouri's not going to. Florida is at OSU. So, again, you know, postseason baseball makes for uncomfortable bedfellows. We don't play Florida, so we'll be pulling for LSU. We really would like for LSU to get hot down the stretch here because they're going to play some teams that are similarly situated with us that could shake up the RPI. And again, LSU still trying to make it. And it's a crazy situation. They're 9-15. They probably got to get 5 wins, maybe 4, and then make a run in the tournament. But LSU could run some interference for us. And so we're big Tiger fans in addition to Mississippi State fans. Next weekend, Tennessee is at Oklahoma. Again, we don't play Oklahoma. You root for Tennessee. And then Georgia's at Auburn. We're Auburn Tiger fans in many respects. Now, our outlook may change about Auburn depending on the results of this weekend. If Auburn beats us, then we got to switch our allegiance for Georgia because we want to stay ahead of Auburn in the SEC standings. And so that's, again, we'll review all that next week. But, you know, we're all doing this scoreboard watching stuff. And, again, you're looking at standings, and conference finish still matters. Still matters. And you can't do anything about Texas. I mean, you just simply can't. So you got to put your eyes on A&M. We've touched on that before. You get a chance to play them. They have a difficult road series this week. And you got to wonder, like, if Ole Miss plays well and beats up A&M, and Schlossnagel left some good players there, and Michael Early has absolutely rebounded this year. I remember leaving Hoover last year. It was going to that press conference, dude, it was like a funeral. You just felt like that A&M was going to can them. They have responded. But how will they respond if they have a tough weekend in Oxford? And if Mississippi State wins a series against Auburn, we go in with a lot of juice. So it'll be a great atmosphere. But again, that's kind of where we target ourselves. You know, the higher you finish, the better off you looked before the committee. So again, I don't think we're going to catch Texas barring something unforeseen. But you could catch A&M. And then that ultimately could give you the third place finish in the 16-team league that is the number one RPI team conference in the country. So I wanted to go over that with you, but there's some other things to kind of watch too, you know, kind of around college baseball. As I mentioned, you know, USC kind of leapfrogged over us a little bit for a little while yesterday because they, is that right? I can't, somebody bumped over us and then fell. But I've had some discussions with people with knowledge of the process and they kind of agree with me. This Nevada series, it was supposed to be 4 games, is now 3, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I don't know if it was a mistake on the schedule or whatever, but they will get started. They won last night 8-0 against an RPI team of 151. So USC has 2 more games against an RPI team. So we shouldn't see much advance for them. And I think it's going to be difficult to give them a host spot without a quad one win. Their only opportunity to get it is going to be at Oregon. Oregon, again, a team that's, you know, kind of right around that hosting discussion. You know, some people have to host out west. And as you work through all that, that's one of the things that you kind of begin to consider. I could make a case against Oregon State. I could make a case against USC. But we're going to have some teams west of the Mississippi. So you begin to ask yourself, well, you know, who hosts? You know, Oklahoma's right there at 19. Could they play their way in? Maybe. You know, Kansas is right there at 15. But ultimately, I think you're going to have either USC or Oregon State host. What's interesting about that is Oregon State's only played 4 games against the Quad One. And, of course, they're doing the best they can, but in some ways they're kind of manipulating the schedule. And, again, they've got 7 games left, and every one of them is against a team with 100 RPI or higher. Long Beach State's 241. You know, so that RPI is going to tumble out of the top 16. And so then that, again, creates quite the quandary for the committee is how do you reward a USC team that plays in a bad baseball conference that doesn't win a game against the Quad One? You know, so I guess it really, if you're the committee, you really need USC to win a couple of games against Oregon to give you at least some cover. And this is the challenge for a lot of the Grow the Game advocates out there. You don't want to load up the, you know, the Southeast over and over and over again, but there's not a lot of teams out west that are giving you an opportunity to pick them based on the parameters of the selection process. So let me prepare you. Georgia will be a top 8 unless something crazy happens. And either USC or Oregon State will host and probably have a shaky resume. The truth of the matter is, if I was picking between Oregon State and USC, I would probably go with Oregon State just because of the fact they're having to do a lot of this on the road. You know, they don't have the benefit of a conference schedule. Now, they can't do that forever, obviously. But, you know, again, you're going to have another Far West team. Is it Oregon State? Is it USC? Now, Nebraska's right there at 17. Another Big Ten team. And again, that's the thing with these super conferences. You know, how does it kind of play out? Nebraska 17 in the RPI. And again, that could change, you know, by the end of the day. But when we start looking for teams worthy of hosting west of the Mississippi, one could make a case that maybe that's Nebraska. Now, they have seven games left. All of them are against teams with a sub-100 RPI. They get Iowa, who's at 78, Creighton at 81, and then a road series at Minnesota, who's at 86. So I think Nebraska will play their way in. And that's the thing that you start thinking about. How many hosts do we need west of the Mississippi? Because even though Arkansas is west of the Mississippi, it, you know, it still counts, right? Arkansas could play their way in, and obviously Nebraska. And so, again, you got 16 host sites, and a lot of these are going to be in the south. But I think you've got enough where you don't have to manipulate a lot to find maybe four or five hosting spots west of the Mississippi. And let's just kind of run them down real quick. I mean, you could have maybe half a dozen because you're going to have Texas, right? I think we can all agree Texas will be one. USC is a maybe. Texas A&M, certainly in a position to host too. And I would say they probably have to earn it more than a lot of the teams that are similarly situated. You got to play Ole Miss and State back-to-back weekends. But let's say A&M goes 3-3. Well, they end up with 18 wins in the league. They're going to host, okay? So that gives you two. And we believe between Oregon State and USC, one of those will get it. That's three. Then there's Kansas, four. Nebraska's five. And then if Arkansas and Oklahoma do it, that gives you six. So, again, I don't think you have to manipulate things to, quote, grow the game to satisfy people. So we'll work through that. And, again, what we believe today may not be true on Monday because we're going to play – everybody's going to play some games this week, and then all of a sudden, you know, you got some games next week. You know, we originally had a game scheduled for Tuesday. I don't know if you knew that. We removed it before the season started. This is why we only have a 55-game schedule. We originally had – North Alabama that final Tuesday, and Brian O'Connor elected not to play that game. So we're short a game, but it puts us in a position where we don't have an RPI killer the last weekend, and we also don't have the optics of canceling a game late for RPI purposes. And I think in the end that matters. We made the decision way back in January. So there's so much at stake this weekend, which is one of the reasons I wanted to spend a good portion of this, you know, this segment of the show, just thinking about the teams that are right around us and just looking at a couple teams that are right behind us, the teams that we passed, you know, like North Carolina, really good quality club. And they're going to be, if I can get there, they've got Pitt this weekend in Chapel Hill. Okay, so they're going to win that series, or they should. And that's RPI team in at 48. So, you know, let's say they get a 2-1 split. We get a 2-1 split. We'll stay ahead of them. Midweek game next week, they got UNC Wilmington. It's RPI 103. It'll be interesting to see what they do. And then they close out on the road at NC State. NC State, obviously, still trying to play for something of significance. NC State, obviously, a well-coached team that has been a bit up and down, but it's a rivalry series, and it's in Raleigh. You know, so that's something to kind of watch, too, as we get into the weekend of the next week. Again, you expect North Carolina to win this weekend, and the next weekend it's kind of up for grabs. And then there's Florida State. And a lot of people out there are kind of doubting Florida State. I think they're a really good team. I don't think they're great. I don't think they're elite. They're going to be at Clemson this weekend, and ordinarily you'd say, well, that'll be great. Well, Clemson's RPI is in at 37, so that will help Florida State. And then they close out at home against Miami, who's 28 in the RPI. So some RPI climbing opportunities there for Florida State. They got to win games, though. And so when you start kind of considering they're playing for a top eight, Lincoln, those guys are still working hard for that. That's one of those teams that could have a huge swing one way or the other. And so ultimately, all these things matter and impact Mississippi State's postseason resume. And there's teams, we're going to root against a lot of teams. We want to root for upsets against everybody, around us, just because of the fact that, we want to be in the best position we possibly can be. You know, and that's a thing like A&M playing Ole Miss. Ole Miss is 13 in the RPI, and Mississippi State is 6. So A&M, some upward mobility. And again, it's a very simple process for them. If they go 3-3, they are absolutely hosting and could play their way into a top eight. I guess the thing that I consider with this is the Georgia portion of the equation. You know, Georgia's just, it's such a wild scenario to think that your SEC front leading team is so bad against the non-conference metrics. But they have LSU at 55 and then Auburn. So that could be a scenario where at least Georgia climbs a little bit closer to the top 10 that gives you a little bit of cover. But at the end of the day, the SEC regular season champion is going to get a top eight. It is. And that's just kind of how things are going to play out. But most important thing for Mississippi State is go win some games. Yeah, continue to win games. And kind of looking at the projected RPI thing, you know, the now projected RPI for Mississippi State is 4. And wouldn't that be something? Be incredible. Because Warren Nolan had originally projected us to lose that game. They expected us to take the series against Auburn but lose last night. And so if their projections hold, which they're projecting a sweep, I'm not going to do that. And they're projecting us to sweep A&M now, which I'm not going to do that either. But wouldn't it be great if we did? But they now have us projected to go 19-11 in the conference. 19-11 in the conference absolutely gets you a top eight. I have thought all year long that 18 will probably get it done. But there's just so much noise. Really, honestly, I think once you get out of the top three, and I would say four, but, you know, Auburn still got, you know, some difficult games to play. But when you look at their metrics with strength of schedule, number one, non-conference RPI, number one, they went out and scheduled themselves an opportunity to play postseason baseball at Plains and Park. I for some reason, I kind of like the matchup with Auburn and Georgia, especially being at home. But to me, UCLA, Georgia Tech, and Texas, I think everybody would agree they're absolutely three of the best teams in college baseball and absolutely going to get a top eight. The Auburn situation right now, yes. They lose this series this weekend and lose next weekend. And they get 16 wins. Can you give them a top eight when you're having to already push Georgia? Especially if Georgia wins that series. I think Auburn absolutely hosts, but I think if they lose these last two series, then Auburn is the team that suffers the most down the stretch. And then, of course, there's Alabama. And I'm not a believer in Bama. They're 5 in the RPI. So they're certainly going to host, but I've told people before, please pair us up with that one, because if we play them in a super, we're going to win. I just don't believe Alabama is offensively what you kind of need them to be. They're up and down. We'll see. And, of course, there'll be a couple of, you know, ACC teams you have to consider. And again, North Carolina, a team that, you know, right behind Georgia Tech in the standings. And so you begin to kind of wonder, as Alabama drops, as Florida State possibly drops, they have an opportunity to play their way in. You know, what does that mean for the teams around them? Again, it gets really muddy once you get out of the top three. And so this weekend will give us a little bit of clarity. We'll pretty much know, hey, if you win that series next weekend, you're locked in regardless of what happens in the conference tournament. So enjoy the rest of today, and hopefully we can get a win tonight. I think it's going to be more difficult tonight than it was last night. But you win that game, you're in a great position if you're Mississippi State, and probably a top five RPI by close of business, provided you win tonight. And already have 16 wins wrapped up with 14 to play within your league. And then all of a sudden you start thinking again about the winning two of the last four to finish with 18 or more, right? It is Mother's Day weekend, so even though that you guys are not my moms, and I didn't make any of you mothers, to all the moms that listen to the show, happy Mother's Day to you. And shout out to all those moms that are mothering somebody else's child too, right? Even if you don't have children of your own, if you're playing a central role and making a positive impact in the life of a child out there, no matter what age they are, thank you for your contributions to our society. Be sure to send your mom something, take her out to dinner, but absolutely make sure you call her. Don't just do a text, okay? She wants to hear your voice. She does. Let's not just all jump in the group text and say Happy Mother's Day. Let's be sure we take care of our moms. And very, very happy to have the moms that I have had in my life. Obviously, my mom, Beth Kraut, lives in Columbia, Mississippi, and love her to death. She's the kindest person I've ever known. Always thinking of other people. Never gets aggravated with people. You know, she's just one of those people that just believes that life is supposed to be something that we all enjoy and not necessarily endure. My stepmom, Dolores Robertson, is married to my dad, and she was the love of his life. And so grateful to have had her in my life, much of my life, since the early 80s, you know. Got a couple of sisters out of the deal, and three, I guess, now that I think about it. But love her, and of course, my lovely wife, Dana, who's carried all my babies. And it's one of those things that you look back in life and you think about the pathology of all that, and you realize that how what an integral part in your life that women make. So I have always healed under the care of women. And every time that I'm ever upset or hurt, that's what I've always retreated to. I've always retreated to the women in my life to help me heal. And that's just being transparent with you. It's because of the love and nature of the women that have been around me in my life. It is Mother's Day weekend, and if you're looking for a unique last-minute gift idea, and the phone is ringing off the hook down there at True Rest Float Spa, Starkville, dial 662-268-7601 to get more information. Buy mom a couple floats. You get two floats for $99. What a great deal that is. One float is $89, so we're making you a little special deal here. Two for $99. You can speak directly to the mother of all my children, Dana. Again, 662-268-7601. Go to dutynoblebook.com, and you get signed copies of all my sports titles there. And, of course, come join us over at jeanspage.com. You can take 50% off the annual subscription price for a limited time only. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.